What I'm going to hand out is what's referred to as a mashgiach checklist, which we've given to our mashgichim to really focus them on what is the job of mashgiach in the establishment. I want to go through them and through the questions, give you a focus of what the varying areas a mashgiach has to be aware of. One thing you have to understand very, very clearly is that the staff of the restaurant in no way, shape, or form are interested in having a mashgiach there. They could care less. Most people who are involved in kashrus, most people who are involved in cooking, the last thing they want is someone to tell them what to do. And it's a challenge of a mashgiach to develop a relationship with the people. In fact, one of the people who I learned a great deal from in how to deal with a non-Jewish staff was Rabbi Rocco's father, Shlita. When he served as a mashgiach for the OU, and now he works for us in the office, but he served as a mashgiach in the hospital, which was which changed over from not kosher to being kosher. His father was the executive rabbinic supervisor when it changed over, and he really took his many years in education to know that in order to get people to do something, you have to really show that you're part of a team and you're not going and it's not us against them, but we're all on the same team. The concept of Imo Anochi Betzara. Right. That's what David HaMelech says about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yikra'eni ve'neyu imo anochi v'tzara. When I call out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he answers, imo anochi v'tzara, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with us in all the difficulty. L'havdil, the non-Jewish staff has to know that you're with them. The first step for a mashgiach to show that he's an imo anochi v'tzara is to come on time. Right, in one of the manuals that one of my chaverim wrote that we give out to all our mashgichim, he writes in there, 1 minute late is 10 minutes too late. If the restaurant is ready to open, and all OU restaurants have a mashgiach from opening to closing, mashgiach has to open the refrigerators, often has to maybe even open the restaurant, in order for the place to be able to operate. If mashgiach has to be there at 7 o'clock in the morning, and it's now 7:25 and he's still not there, and there are 10 workers there. So there are two things that happen. The first thing that happens is that there are 10 people times 25 minutes. That's 4 hours of time that you just stole from the owner. That all the people who were there have to get paid for that time. And you weren't there. More than that, the people have a feeling that you don't respect them, you don't care for them. And therefore, they're not going to accommodate you in what you need to do. So really, the starting point is of coming on time. Even more important than coming on time for the non-Jewish staff, I think that some of them may want to come in or just looking at the door, is when there are two shifts of mashgichim. Right? The tendency that we might have to think is if you're there from 7 o'clock to 4 o'clock and someone else is there from 4 o'clock to 11 o'clock, what's the big deal if I come at 10 after 4? There's a mashgiach there already. What's the big deal? And what time do you finish school every day? Finish yeshiva? 5:30, right? If I'm still speaking at 5:31, you guys are ready to kill me. Correct? Is that accurate? Yeah. Just like a rav of a shul, if he davens marv late on Motzei Shabbos, it's the biggest avil he can commit. Finishing late is a big avla as well. Person who's ready to leave at 4 o'clock. We had a situation when I first started in the OU over 11 years ago. It was a restaurant with such a schedule of 7 to 4 and 4 to 11. The mashgiach who was there from 7 to 4 had a ride at 4:10 to where he lived in Muncie every day. If he didn't get the ride at 4:10, he would have to, walk in 10 blocks and go catch the bus and get home an hour later than he would have gotten home. And unfortunately, the night mashgiach, twice a week, the guy missed his ride. So besides the idea that you have to come on time, where's the Ben Adam Al-Chaver? Right, the mashgiach who's waiting to go home. Every minute after 4 o'clock is torture for that mashgiach. Not, you know, but he's erlich and he's not running out and say, listen, you deal with it, you're not here, I'm not running away. And that also is a major challenge for a mashgiach not to go ahead and run out and maintain his erlichkeit. But also, it's just not fair to not fair to one another when it comes to these circumstances. So a job of mashgiach requires a lot of Yirat Shamayim, and we'll see in a number of different areas throughout this list that we're going through. But it also is a challenge to maintain the relationship. I tell mashgichim that between 65% and 70% of your job is how you establish relationships. If you treat people with respect, right, it comes back to you. There's a lahavdil elef alfei avdalos. You know, the Bali Musar talk about two different types of yira. Right, there's a yiras haonesh and yiras haron. We're afraid of being punished, or we're afraid of the awesomeness and the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When it comes to people's respect of a mashgiach, right, there are two types of yira of respect, not yira of fear. There's the respect, they don't want to get punished. Or there's that yiras haromimus, that they have so much respect for the rabbi that they couldn't fathom doing something that will upset the rabbi. And that doesn't come, you can't walk in and start making demands of them. Right? They have to see that you're part of a team, that you care about them. What does it mean you care about them? So I have one rabbi who kashers many hotels for weddings and bar mitzvahs and other simchas and dinners. When he's kashering and he's going to check the bar, right, on the where they have the drinks and whatnot, when he goes over to the bar, he'll take two 2-pound containers with him. He'll fill it with ice and Coke, soda, not anything else. Right? And come back to the kitchen and give it to the chef. Here, chef, here's a drink. Right, the chef here is sweating to get chicken and all the food for 700 people. Right? What did he do already? He went to the bar. They're filling up the bar anyway. Give me two of these things with soda, take it to the chef. The rest of the night, anything this mashgiach is going to ask of the chef, no problem, rabbi. You call it, you want to call it shoychat? Okay, you want to call it shoychat, but it's really showing that you think about, and what's worse is you go over to the bar, you get one drink, you come into the kitchen, and you stand there drinking in front of all of them, and you didn't get anything for them. Just an understanding of how to approach. So I want to try and go through this and try and discuss some of the interesting nuances that a mashgiach has to deal with, and it's also to keep him focused. Right? I won't say that every OU restaurant, the OU has the key to the door and no one else can get in. That's not true. We either lock up the guests or we protect the guests, but all the refrigerators are locked. And we have other different ways where we protect the cooking from being done. Whether they shut off the gas or they cover the gas, whatever the circumstances. But who has keys to all the doors? It's important. You have to know who it is, right? Has the access. Just one of the things that we implemented a couple of years ago. I was in California for business purposes, and I was speaking to a Rav who takes care of a Vod in California, and he told me a system that he set up for Mashgichim, a call-in system. What's a call-in system? It's like punching in, if you will. What he uses it for is for billing, for catering in hotels that the Hashgacha pays the Mashgichim. Mashgich has to call when he arrives, and he has to call before he leaves. And they log it, and that's how the next day they're able to build a caterer for the event. You don't have to wait for the mashgiach to call, and they call 2 days, 3 days, finally reach him. When he showed me this system, which after all is one of these internet phone systems that costs $15 a month. You know, not some elaborate, you know, system. So what we did was we implemented this, that every mashgiach who goes into an OU restaurant has to call from the restaurant phone to this number, leave his name, place, and time of call. It logs on, one of the secretaries in the OU logs on to this and listens and puts a log in who called, what time he called, what time, morning and night. They have to do it when they come and before they leave. There was a dual purpose in setting this up. One was to have the mashgichim feel that they have a nachrayis to be on time. And in fact, the number of mashgichim told me, Pe Malay, they feel more of a nachrayis to be on time because, you know, they're... and there's a mashgiach who we're about to fire because he's been coming late too often. That was one purpose. The second purpose was, I get so many complaints when you have an issue with the restaurants. Oh, the rabbi's always late. Right, that's the first. Right, that's the first thing that they say. They said the rabbi was late. We were under pressure or everything, you know, as an excuse. So once the owners know that now we're keeping a cheshbon of what time they're coming. In the last year, I've not gotten a complaint, other than once or twice when I know the mashgiach overslept and, you know, those complaints have gone out the window. So I told the mashgiach, I'm protecting you, because they're always telling me you're coming late. I don't believe it. But here I have a verifiable way to check this out. And in fact, the way this is set up, I have a separate Yahoo email account. That it sends an email every time the person calls with the phone number he called from. So I can, at a quick glance, see who called and what time they called, if they came late. No, and initially, I would call a guy. I said, I see you came, you know, 20 minutes late. What, you know, what's going on? And they realize that there's, you know, quote unquote big brothers watching, right? That this worked. A few months after we implemented the system, the state of New York. Division of Agriculture and Kosher, whatever they call themselves, kosher law enforcement, asked for they have an issue. Their issue is how to verify that the supervisors of all hashgachas that claim they're kosher are coming. How often they're coming? So they created a log that a person has to fill out every time the person comes. He has to sign. So I called up. You know, Rabbi Weiss, who's the head of the kosher law enforcement, and told him of our system. They spoke to their lawyers, and their lawyers accepted this system as an official log, and we can email that to them once a month, and that was how it works. So now I have an even greater, you know, way of telling mashgichim that they have to do it, because now I say, if I don't do it, the state's going to fine us. If the state finds us, guess who's not paying me? Us. Right, listen, you know, the first couple times we warned people, we told them, we reminded them in writing and etc. Now Baruch Hashem, most of the people do, but that's how important this is. Who has keys or access to the refrigerators or freezers? One of the issues that we had in the past was we would always have an emergency envelope with the keys in there. All right, the keys signed with tape with the mashgiach signature. What we found happened is when the mashgiach was late, so they knew where the envelope was. They would break the envelope. They would, rabbi's late. They open the keys, open the refrigerator, whether there was a yid or not a yid there, etc. And maybe by accident, if the mashgiach called and said he's sick or told us that he wasn't there, then we would find out about it. Otherwise, we might not even find out about it. What we did was we instituted. In many homes around the metropolitan area and around, they have what they call a Shabbos lock on their door. Right? Push button, non-digital, combination lock on the door. This way, you don't have to carry a key. The question of Erev, no question, you know, the kids can come at any time, they don't have to carry keys, and they go in. And I, in fact, in Long Island, have one of my houses also, and that's how I get in my house. They make a thing similar called Store Key, which is a box, a lock box, where you have a combination, and the keys are left there. So what we did at most places, and I think are almost weeded out all the places that have emergency keys, they have these boxes with the combinations, which I have on my contact list for all the restaurants. I have the combinations in there, and a couple of other people in the OU have it as well, besides the mashgichim. Now the keys are in the restaurant, and that what are you supposed to do when you get a call on Motzei Shabbos from the mashgiach? Oh, I took the keys home Thursday night and I forgot them at home. Right? What are you supposed to do now? Right? Go back, take a car. Right? Who's paying for the car service? It all becomes a set of keys is always in the place, but you have to know that the restaurant or the caterer doesn't have an extra set. So you need to know who has keys to the refrigerators. Briefly describe the closing procedure. What is it that you're doing in protecting them? You know, if you look at number six, right? Number six asks about a cleaning crew. One of the things we found through the years is that when there's a cleaning crew at night, if the gas is not shut off, you know, there are two people there. One guy's going to go to McDonald's across the street and bring a couple of cheeseburgers. And by the time he comes back, it's not hot enough, so he wants to put it on the grill for a couple minutes. And then you have a tray for grill in the restaurant. So we want to protect the cooking equipment from being used. How many doors lead into the kitchen? What controls monitor the side and back doors? Again, it's to focus the mashgiach on what he needs to do. Number seven is an interesting one. You carry your own thermometers. Right? The state health department comes in with their thermometers to check if the temperatures of the cold food is the right temperature or hot food. Right? They put their thermometer that just came from McDonald's into there. You have a shayla l'chayra, v'di'evit, it's probably mutter, it's batel, it's not an issue. But again, the mashgiach should, or the chefs should have their own thermometer to be sure that, and they should have one for fleishiks, if it's fleishiks and no, they should have separate ones for each one. Next, are all pilot lights working properly? Anyone know what a pilot light is?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Bishul Akum, I think you learned. So the food has to be cooked by a Jew. The OU as a policy relies on pilot lights as a backup system. Because we have mashgichim to meet them in every one of our places, we have the mashgichim turn on the fires. The goyim can adjust the fires during the course of the day, but the mashgiach has to turn on the fire. If the pilot light serves, is you know, the Rama in Sif Zayin talks about pilot lights. There are many people are of the opinion of Bnei Yisrael Yotzim Biyad Rama. The Rama says l'chatchila you can rely on pilot lights and that's enough. Rabelski and others felt that in a place where we have a mashgiach tamidi, you don't need to come onto the Rama. You have a mashgiach, let the mashgiach turn on the fire. So we l'chatchila try and we have the mashgiachim turn on the fires, but we serve as a backup system. We don't want to be discarding food. And that's a very important idea that one has to be aware of. The fact that food can't be used does not necessarily mean that you have to throw it out. You may have to sometimes prove a point, but you have to also be chas al mamona. Right? You have a goyish staff. You give, yeah, here, Goy, you're leaving now, take the food home. Get out of here. Or you know, in certain circumstances, we actually have a number of restaurants owned by Goy. Right? It's owned by Goy, yeah. Here, Goy, take it home. You know, this can't be used here. Fine. But, the, you know, we had a situation a few weeks ago where, you know, a mashgiach called us about three packages of meat that were left in the freezer with no simonim and came in the morning. So we told him if that's the case, and we'd warn the place, you know, that was not acceptable. And we told him at this point you have to discard it. We didn't tell him throw it out. Discard it. You know, we didn't tell him he had to throw it out. He had to get rid of it. We told him he had to discard it. At the end of the day, the mashgiach went looking into the freezer and found like another six packages of meat. And what he did was he was concerned that wherever he was going to put it, it was going to find its way out of the garbage. So what he did was he poured bleach over all the meat. And the owners of the restaurant were justifiably angry that they weren't told about the right. You know, we're talking about $500 of meat. It wasn't just the three packages. Listen, it's a knas. You have to go take it home and have a nice barbecue in your treifa house. But you know, we didn't know about the other seven. If we had known about the other seven, probably the poskim would have not told them to throw it out, because you're talking about a much greater, much greater hefsid and much less likely that it's that it's an issue. But more than that, they didn't realize how much that they were throwing out. So, you have to be sensitive, and especially in economic times we're dealing with today, you know, every penny is valuable, whether it's right or wrong. So, right, pilot light's working properly. We want to check that they're all working, because if the pilot light's not working, if the non-Jew turned on the fire, we can have an issue of bishulakum. One thing that's very important to know, and you can tell me better. Is the fire the only thing that you can do to prevent bishulakum? Huh?
No.
What else can you do?
Go to put together a batter?
No, what else can a yid do to obviate, to take away?
Put the food on the fire.
I can put the food on the fire. He can stir the pot. Yeah. Right. So this is an important point that I'm bringing up, that, and I tell Mashgichim all the time. Before you call me and tell me the guy turned on the fire, stir the pot. Turn off the fire and turn it back on. Right, do something, do a maisa, do an act in the cooking process to be sure that the food is not tricked. Right? Because if now the food becomes bishulakum, not only do you have an issue of the food, you have an issue of what it was cooked on in the kitchen. Right? It's a whole story. There are two issues that we have to deal with. You have to deal with the issue of Asher Ucham, is this egg, are these eggs kosher? Right? Eggs are something of an issue with bishulakum. And, you know, how do we get them to follow the policy? Right? Those are two concurrent issues, but you have to deal with them separately. So, you know, sometimes the mashgiach, you know, has to, and this is a story that I want to share, because there are two approaches that a mashgiach can take. And it really comes back to what I started with, of the Ima Anochi Betzara. The mashgiach sees the chef taking a dirty meat knife, right, full of meat grease, to cut salmon, right? And the chef is standing where Rabbi Rakov is sitting, and I'm on this side of the room, and I can do one of two things. I can scream at the top of my lungs, "Treif!" I don't want to scream it. Or I can take a clean knife, walk over to the chef, say, "Chef, I think you want to use this," and walk away. Right? In both situations, the chef didn't use the knife. The question is, what's the chef going to do tomorrow? What's the chef going to do in 10 minutes when he has the same situation? The point of the story is that we are often view the mashgiach's job as being an inspector. Right? We're trying to chop and catch him. Right? The hashgacha is a service agency. We're supposed to be thinking three steps ahead of them and preventing this from happening. Right? Just because you're preventing something from happening doesn't mean you're not doing your job. Right? Often, when you get a phone call, "I caught them," right? It was 8 out of 10 times it was the mashgiach's fault. He's like standing here, and he's watching, and he's sitting and seeing the chef, you know, grabbing, you know, he says he knows the chef has, he's taking out this big thing of salmon, he's about to cut it. You see him say, take yourself, walk over, "Chef, I think you want to use this knife," and go ahead. You treat him with respect, he treats you back with respect, but it's a mindset. That yes, you know, there are times, right? The chef turned on the fire, the non-Jew turned on the fire. You have to deal with it, but you have to deal with it with seichel, and you have to first deal with the ba'asher husham, right then and there, and then you go ahead and deal with the question of how are we going further with this issue. So that's important. That yes, the pilot lights are important, the fire is important, but the purpose of the turning on the fire and turning on the ovens and etc. is to prevent bishulakum, to prevent the food cooked by a non-Jew. The preventing food cooked by a non-Jew, the fire is, at least for Bnei Ashkenaz, right, for the Svardim, it doesn't really help me, the fact that the Jew turned on the fire. The Jew has to do a process and have a hand in the cooking process. If the fire is on, and the Jew puts the fire on the on the fire, that's already enough to be considered what's called Bishul Beis Yosef, right, according to the Marana Beit Yosef. That's or he stirs the pot or does something in the cooking process. Then we go to these right signs, right, saying, you know, often we have signs in English and in Spanish to tell the staff, you know, don't turn on any fires, only the rabbi can turn on the fire, vegetable. We have many signs that have also been translated into Spanish to take care of those English challenged speaking people working in the kitchen.
Is that a real concern today?
What?
Spanish speaking.
For sure. I mean, I think in a number of the Chinese restaurants, Rabbi Eisen has had actually these signs translated into Chinese also. The list of vegetables, obviously, the vegetables require bedika and how they're doing and what they're doing. Outgoing orders, right? We have to prevent, you know, when food is sent through a non-Jew, it has to have simonim to know what is doing. Number 15 and 16 are very important. Do you personally check in all incoming products? Right? Mashgiach has to check and know. Right? In fact, while I was speaking the previous class, I got a text message from Mashgiach about a certain product regarding a certain hefsher, whether it was okay. Thank you. You know, regarding of whether this would be acceptable or this would not be acceptable to use, right? So this is something Mashgiach has to be checking everything that's coming in, and just because something came yesterday this way and this and not this way, you have to really check.
Mashgiach is not sure of the product. Does he have a right to stop anything going on in the kitchen until?
Yeah, 100%. If he's not sure, he has a right. I mean, my cell phone is active. When I get home on Friday afternoon, when I shut off my cell phone, I have it forwarding home. So if I get a call before Shabbos, I'm available. And I have email on my phone, and Mashgichim can reach me at almost any hour of the day, except when I'm sleeping. I try to, actually in my phone at home, the my home phone, the ringer is off in my bedroom at night. Because when I first moved to Long Island, the Rav, I started getting kashrus calls at all hours of the night. I was waking up my wife. So what I did was, I have two phone lines. On my first phone line, I have it says, the message says, if you need to reach Rabbi Schreier in an emergency, try our second phone line. Right. So that will at least, 98 out of 100 calls that would come at that hour of the day are not emergencies that can't wait till the morning. Checking for Ashgachah is very important. Two examples that have come up many times in restaurants: mashed potato mix. So I've had occasions to speak in the 6th, 7th, and 8th grades of a number of schools about how to be careful in checking for ingredients and checking labels. I do a whole show and tell with different products. One of the products I show is mashed potato mix. Two brands of mashed potato mix, both kosher. One is OU, plain parv, and the other one says OUD, which has dairy. The one that's OU parv says add milk and butter, right? Or add margarine, or add butter, right? This right next to the OU, right? So you have to be careful. Check, you have to check every product, and just because you ordered, and that's something that a mashgiach has to be sensitive to. Many of the distributors that these restaurants are ordering from, in case someone is sleeping, many of these distributors the restaurants are ordering from aren't always sending the same exact thing every day. They're distributing whatever they can send you. And they can send you margarine today, which is parv, and tomorrow the margarine will be OUD. Right? The mashgiach has to check, because most companies' mottos is they're not going to not send you something. They're not going to tell you it's back ordered if they don't have to. Unless you have a policy with them, no substitutions. No substitutions mean they can't send anything else. The other item is chocolate pudding. I was once reviewing a restaurant for another Ashgacha, and I came in and told me the place is Chol Yisrael. and they had chocolate pudding mix. Not chocolate pudding, chocolate pudding in a can. And I saw the can, it says OUD. So I pointed it out to the owner. He showed me that in a different size can that he got the day before was OU Parv. Right, and he must have fallen through the through the crack. But again, you have to be careful. Even the same product can be an issue. Turn to the other side. What do you do? What do you do for something new comes in? Right, we're working on putting together ingredient lists for every one of the restaurants, or for all companies, all factories. OU has a very meticulous ingredient list of all the ingredients and products produced in the companies because of the volatility of the restaurants, where they could get this margarine today and that margarine tomorrow and this margarine the next day. Right, it's very hard to have unless they're married to Hellman's mayonnaise or Heinz ketchup as such, it's very hard to maintain such a list, but we're in the process of putting it together and actually have someone visiting the establishments who's going to be putting them together in earnest so we can have a better control on that. All right, so now, what do you do if you're in doubt? Right, again, want to know, who do you, one of the important parts for Hashgacha agency is knowing that we have a confidentiality agreement with every one of our establishments. So now, if any of you happen to be working in an establishment, and any contract is always a confidentiality clause, you can't go to your rabbi in shul and say, Rabbi, I'm working in Yossi's restaurant, and I saw in Yossi's restaurant that they're getting in X. Is that okay? You can't do that. Right, your place to ask the question is to the Hashgacha. Very often, some of the nuanced questions, the Rav will not understand, not because he didn't learn the halachas and didn't learn the Shulchan Aruch and and is not familiar, but it's just not familiar with the industry of why this is happening. The same thing happens when you have a substitute mashgiach in an establishment. One of the things we've told mashgiachim is they should be keeping a log. What's a log? They're keeping a notebook, a memo pad. Anytime they ask about a product that's under some different hashgacha, and ask about a different, and we say it's okay, either it doesn't need hashgacha or this hashgacha is okay, they should write it in a book. So when a mashgiach, someone else comes, or the night mashgiach comes and says, what's this doing on the shelf? Oh, it's in the book. He said, Rabbi Schreier said it was okay, Rabbi this one said it was okay, in the OU, then it was approved, and you write the date when it was approved. This will take a lot of this away. I want to try and get the time remaining down to some of the things that you've discussed. Right. Meat coming in with proper simonim. Right, they have to make sure. Yeah.
Why does Tide have an OU?
Why does Tide have a very good? It's a very good question. The company Procter & Gamble has made it a corporate decision that any product of theirs that meets the standard of kosher should have an OU. So whether it's Tide, whether it's Palmolive such a company, or Dawn, or whatever the products that they make, the OU is verifying that there's no non-kosher animal fat or other such in the product. That's what that's saying. And the OU is visiting the factory.
Yeah, where does it make a difference if there's...
That's a good question. The OU is not calling up Procter & Gamble and telling them that Tide has to have Ashgacha, nor are they calling the many water companies that they are certifying and telling them they have to have Ashgach on the water. However, if a company asks, right, there's no specific person in the OU who gets more money because there's another company. The OU is a communal Ashgach. They serve many NCSY, Yachad, other programs in Israel and around the country and various other purposes. So this money is going back into the community. So the OU is not going to say no if someone asks them to give Ashgach. Right, dog food, the OU did put a say no to. Even though there are many people with pets, the OU felt that there was a level they wouldn't go to. There is such an item. I mean, it happens to be that that much of the dog food that's made is a shayla of basar v'chalav, but that's a different...
Shura al-kelev, that's good.
Huh?
Shura al-kelev, that's good.
But if you won't, you're not allowed to have hana from basar v'chalav. So if your dog...
So
why do you have a dog?
Right.
Ah, okay, that's your problem, but that's the fresh filleted fish, knowing what fish comes in, what whether it comes with proper simanim. Number 25 is very important. Keeping the segregation of all the different spices and flour and breadcrumbs that are going between meat and fish. Right? In some kitchens, they have. Well, it's more, they'll have a bowl where they're going to dip the schnitzel, the chicken cutlet, into the bowl to bread it. Then they'll dip it in the egg. They'll dip it back in the breadcrumb. Then they're going to put it on to fry. Now someone orders a fried fish. Same flour, same egg, same flour. Yeah, now you have meat and fish, or chicken and fish together. So you have to be aware that they have separate bins and separate containers to make fish and to make meat. And, you know, sometimes in a narrow kitchen, which is sometimes even smaller than this desk, right, the size of the desk, or maybe a little bigger, you know, you have to really be on top of what's going on. How do you control and handle tefilas kelim? It's a major challenge. You know, the kelim that the restaurant's using, you have to make sure that the table's in it. Someone has to be on top of being sure that's the case. One issue that comes up is there, even if you're on top of everything that's being titled, there's certain kelim that just can't. How are you going to title this major mixer or this big deep fryer? How are you titling these things? So there are certain times where a mechira can be made. You know, you sell a portion of it to a guy. A number of our restaurants actually have a partner who's not Jewish. There's a partner who's not Jewish that obviates the need for tefilas kelim. Right, so that's it, and it's important that if you know that there's a non-Jewish partner, to go ahead and tovel the kelim anyway, because you want to be frum. Right, it's what they call tovel sheretz biyado. There's no purpose in it, because there's no chiyuv to it, and one does not have to do it. What do you do if the utensil becomes treif? Right, so not always do you have to throw it out. But putting on the side is very nice if it's not going to be reused. Right, you know, if I put it over here, and 5 minutes later it's back here, that, you know, there has to be a system in place.
Is the bin for treif?
Right. In-house baked items. I want us to be aware if they're making bread, they're making cake, they're using plenty of flour. You have to be aware. In fact, you know, one of the restaurants that recently certified is a pizza shop, which has a 50% partner that's not Jewish. So now, in order to have a chiyuv of challah, you have to double the amount that's being made. Right, if you need 5 pounds or a little more than 5 pounds to be mafresh, you need to be making 10 pounds in order to have a chiyuv hafrasha on the challah. So you have to be aware of how it's done, what's done. What system is used for checking eggs? 2 days ago, I got a call from a restaurant who, you know, they want to start making sunny side up eggs or different type of eggs in the morning. They asked me, does the rabbi have to crack the eggs? So generally, the rabbi has to be on top of the system that's done for cracking eggs. The minhag of the Rama is that we check eggs for blood spots, even though maybe even if you find a blood spot, you may not have to do anything with it. But that the custom is to check them. So what I told the owner was that what you could do is you could take 10 little cups, have the mashgiach crack the eggs into these cups, and when you're down to 3 eggs, ask him to do 10 more. Right, and then the guy can put it on, you know, the fire is on, there's no issue of it. You know, originally I told him no, the mashgiach would have to do it, and I realized that there's a way to do it. You crack it first, you know, into a cup, and then you pour it from the cup onto the fire. Cut onions or eggs left overnight. The Mara Nida talks about the sakana involved with these items, although the Shulchan Aruch doesn't mention it. we try to be makbid for either adding oil or salt to them or not cutting. One of the places was trying to find a solution. So the question was with the onion, how is it called a cut onion? So, you know, one of the things that I also have on my phone, the camera. Alright, so there were two shilas recently, you know, related to this that came up. One is a Bishul Akum shaila. The Bishul Akum shaila was, there are different type of pilot lights today. The old time pilot lights in the ovens were, you know, if this is one half and this is the other half of the fires, so the pilot light was in the middle. Today, many of the pilots they're making are really in the middle of the fire. It's not a problem. It's good. The question was.
You can see it.
No, here you can pass it around without pressing any button. You see, the pilots manage in the middle of the fire, as opposed to the side. Here it's in the middle, so it's really. So the
fire is mamish in the middle. Does the mashgiach still have to turn on the fire if that's where the pilot light is mamish in the middle?
Because that's
so
it'll just take a little longer to cook it even if it's on there. So that was something that Rabelsky felt that you know with certain level of being careful we could rely on the. The other question that came up was with the cut onions and eggs.
It's not on the side, it's in the middle.
Is that good or bad?
It's good. It's
not
better.
Because even if the goat is on the fire, it seems the pilot is in the middle of the fire. So it's helping the cooking process, but it also probably be on the side.
The other question with the onion was they wanted to peel the entire onion without cutting off the head. The sakana is with the head off, right? So that we took a picture of the onion.
How about leaving the shell part of the shell on?
Right, of the egg, right? Or leaving some shell, or leaving some shells in the right, leaving some shells in the egg. We try one of the things that we've recommended to a number of places. They have liquid eggs, right? That they're already made in a factory where it's a little more room for coolers, you know, and given ashgacha. So we've told them the places that if you need eggs quickly in the morning and the rabbi can't check it, rather than leaving it overnight, use the liquid eggs. You know, probably more expensive, but when you count the labor time that it takes to track those eggs and get exactly what they want. Sometimes they get a much greater quality of what they want in that way. Does your establishment do outside catering other than drop-offs? It's important to note that these places, you know, you think you're doing a hashgacha in a restaurant and you're basher husham, you're where you are. But if they're going to off-premise places, now they're not just a restaurant, they're a caterer as well. If all they're doing is doing deliveries and dropping it off, drop-off is...
You don't have to supervise how the delivery is, right?
You have to supervise that it's sent out properly. But if now, in addition to sending the food, you're going to set up the food and you're going to heat up the food and you're going to serve the food to them, right? That's a whole different ballgame, a whole different level of hashgacha that's needed. One of the distinctions that we've made with the caterers is the difference between food is from or catered by. Right? If the food is from a place, that means we got the food. The person whose house it's in is responsible for the food. If it's catered by this same caterer, then that means that the assumption is that the Ashgacha is giving the Ashgacha. What translates as catered by? If management of the caterer is at the event, that means the owner, the manager. Waiters is not, you know, but if waiters are there, waiters are not allowed to wear the company logo, right? They can wear a white shirt, but they can't wear the company logo. They're quote-unquote hired as private waiters. But if a manager or, you know, an assistant manager, someone who's recognized as the person of the caterer is there, then you require a mashgiach there because it's now catered by. If kelim, equipment of the caterer is there, we require a mashgiach because they want to bring the kelim back. You need a mashgiach. What other...
Do you only have OU products in your OU...
Absolutely not. With the exception of meat, most of wine and matzah, everything else the OU has a... As a communal organization, our mandate is to try and service the Hamon Am. So yes, we have many ashkachas and we try very strongly to maintain our edge over all the other ashkachas. We're much bigger than any of the other ones. We generally don't try and take away from them unless they try and take it away from us. Right? You know, that we're forced sometimes to respond to their ways, but we don't go and say you can't use this ashkacha, you can't use this ashkacha. If the OU wanted to tomorrow, I think they could make that statement that we don't accept any other ashkacha and have 98% of the world's food under their ashkacha, but that's not what they're... He's trying okay every use. So we don't comment on other ashkacha, so I can't really say something, and certainly not on tape. But the Hamev in Yavin. Huh? You go into your restaurant and you ask them what they're using. We don't comment on other hashgachos. It's very simple.
If someone asks in the restaurant, will they tell them?
If someone asks which hashgachos, no. Yeah. The mashgiach shouldn't answer. The mashgiach should answer you if they ask them whose meat are you using. Right? Everyone has their own shchita they want to use. Whether it's because of fact that they might be familiar with, or it's just it's a good question to ask, or they have no idea what's going on. But the mashgiach should be forthcoming with questions of whose meat are you using, whose bread are you using, is it pas Yisrael, is it not pas Yisrael. But to give you and tell you how much oregano they're putting on the pizza sauce, you're not allowed to do that. That's part of the confidentiality agreement. That's something, you know, that people you know, sometimes... misunderstands. You say it's a confidentiality agreement, so we can't tell anyone anything. So then they say, whose meat are you using? I can't tell you. you can't carry that to the extreme. Right? You have to be careful with that. But it's also important, and that this is where it's a challenge. Very often, mashgichim work in more than one place. Whatever you see in place A, you can't talk about in place B. Because ultimately, the OU is responsible for if such a... Right, you tell place B, that who's the competitor of A, that, oh, this is what they do for making X. Right, and then they start making it, and suddenly everyone's buying it. You know, it's a major shaila. And if they came and, you know, brought a taina against a claim against the OU, they would have what to do. How frequently and for how long do you leave the establishment, the Dav Mincha, etc.? Rav Belsky wrote a tshuva recent over the last couple of years, but reinforced recently, that a mashgiach cannot go out the same time every day to daven mincha. If he does it at infrequent times and it's not a busy time in the kitchen, and they don't really know where he's going, what he's doing, that is what to talk about. But a mashgiach has to really have his focus on being around, not disappearing and not going. Two shifts of mashgiach, so important. The mashgichim communicate with each other. Right, it can't be that the afternoon mashgiach says, oh, this product was checked in by the morning mashgiach, it's not my problem. No. It's a partnership. We're here together following. Is your establishment open on Friday? Right, just to know if there are Shabbos issues, not Shabbos issues. Is your establishment open on Motzei Shabbos? Right, we have a guideline of how soon after Shabbos mashgiach can be there. You know, it's more difficult in Manhattan than it would be, say, in Lakewood. Just as an example, Lakewood, he pops out of his, you know, right, the question is what time Shabbos is over.
to get to Manhattan,
is it? Right, so we've put as the earliest time that the Mashgiach can commit to being there is being an hour and a quarter after Rabbeinu Tam. Right, which plenty, you know, we tell the Mashgiachim you're supposed to get there as soon after Shabbos as possible. Yeah. You know, that you're making Havdalah at 72, not Davening Maariv at 72. Right, that's if you can. Yeah.
That's the 1 minute warning.
Okay, no problem. You're making Havdalah at 72, then that's and you're ready to go. Not that you drink a cup and you know you have an hour and a quarter. So I'll get there in an hour and 14 minutes. No, you're supposed to get there as soon as possible, but you're not considered late until after that hour and a quarter. Which really, Mashgiach should get there within an hour, which will give them 15 minutes to get started, and so they can open up and at least serve something to someone who comes in.
So all those pizza places, which are like open 15 minutes after Shabbos,
where
all not all you.
Where? In Manhattan or Brooklyn?
No, you're taking a flatbush,
right? Right. So that's why I specifically said it's not an issue in Lakewood and Flatbush. The people are living right there.
Yeah.
No, I don't have a kollel in Manhattan where I can send Mashgiachim to. Right? But if the Mashgiach comes earlier than that, they can start as soon as the Mashgiach gets there. We don't commit to a Mashgiach being there unless, you know, there are certain situations where a restaurant has paid a guy who they found in Manhattan who was approved by us to come the second after, as soon after Shabbos as he can, and they pay him extra for that hour until their Mashgiach can get there. But we don't commit to that because, you know, what happens, you know, there's a guy studying in Yeshiva University. Right? Studying in Yeshiva University, they're not there from the middle of May till the end of the summer. They're not there, you know, Sukkot time. They're not there winter vacation time. Right? So there's 25 weeks a year they're not around. Right? So you know, once you start committing to it, you're stuck. So. Right, so this is somewhat of an overview of of the challenge a Mashgiach faces on a regular basis of what he's doing when he's, and some of it I hope was a part of what you've been learning with Rabbi Rakov, which was the purpose of the discussion today.
Thank you.